Off the Ball. GAA.
Haven't beaten them in the championship since 2008, I think. So you know, it's a fair long time. So obviously, like, it's not going to be so much on the day, but the preparation that we do between now and then. So
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Hurling Pod.
Join me, Will O'Callaghan, alongside All-Ireland winners James Skell and Paul Murphy every week across the Championship for the latest stories, insight, reaction and more on the Hurling Pod.
And I know for some of the older school guys, they hate this. They hate this idea that the ball has to be made heavier, or hurls need to be standardised, or something needs to happen to stop this long shoot. But I think what we're forgetting is that players are probably better athletes now.
Catch us live on youtube.com/offtheball at 7pm each Sunday, or listen back on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Off the Ball.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday Nights Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up this hour, we're going to be speaking to Tommy Rooney and to Caoimhín Riley to get an overview on the weekend's Gaelic football action. Caoimhín Riley, of course, having written for the Louth Media for a number of years, will have been a happy man watching on from afar yesterday. We're going to get his take on the history that was made by Louth football yesterday as they overcome Monaghan to reach an All-Ireland semi-final for the first time since the 1950s. And we're going to go deeper on that. We'll do a broader picture analysis piece with Eamon McGee and with Darren O'Sullivan from 8 o'clock, where we look at all four All-Ireland quarter-finals, which, to be fair, as a weekend delivered in spades. And then between 9 and 10, as ever, the football show is coming your way. We'll be joined by Simon Cooper from the United States. He'll be keeping a close eye on this Brazil versus Japan game, of which the second half is about to begin very shortly. Brazil trailing by a goal to nil. A Sano strike from mid-range has them behind. Simon Cooper was writing this week for the Financial Times about how Vinicius Jr. is the centrepiece of this Brazil team. Everything goes through him. He is the star of this team. He has yet to show up in a big way in this game. Brazil yet to show up in a big way in this game. So that is the situation there. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to get in touch with us on WhatsApp. David Seagrave will be bringing you the news round very shortly. Good evening to you, David.
Evening.
And Arthur O'Dea is here with us as well. How are you, Arthur?
Great, how are you?
Yeah, very well. So this first half, from a Brazilian perspective, it might just be the sort of half and the sort of moment that leads to the goal that allows Manchester United fans to breathe a sigh of relief. Casemiro, maybe the football had actually left him.
It's hard in those. And, you know, if there's going to be any pace, he'll probably be a little bit exposed. It's funny, I didn't kind of expect to see him back so prominent after the first half of that Morocco game, where he was kind of brutally exposed, quite similarly to this. So, yeah, I mean, there's a limit to what he can do, and I don't suspect he'll be coming back out.
There was an awful pass, really, in the build-up to the goal as well, which puts him into that position where he has to kind of turn and run back towards his goal, which is the last thing you want to see Casemiro doing. There was also a rather unfortunate moment where himself and Lucas Paquetá are going for the same ball, and Paquetá gets poleaxed, ends up on his head as a result of going into the challenge with Casemiro. So it has elements of a parody about it, even though Brazil, I would argue, have been the better team in the first half. The memes already exist in terms of the tragedy that might be unfolding here for Brazilian football once again.
Yeah, they're definitely better, but like they're so they're flawed in all the ways you expected they would have been, which is just kind of the funny part about it. I suppose you'd think with Ancelotti and whatever else that you'd have had maybe a better handle on those things, or maybe, you know, he can handle that type of thing of not playing Casemiro, even though it was stand to reason, you know, his reputation and everything else. But he's been flawed and he's been exposed really brutally.
Like when you go through their recent results in the World Cup, the recent departures in the World Cup, it's been consistently inglorious. The 7-1 obviously stands out, but even their last two, the Belgium quarterfinal that they lost in Russia and then the penalty shootout defeat to Croatia at the quarterfinal stage in 2022... Maybe there's a bit of hindsight talking here, and the greatness of those Belgian and Croatian teams aren't properly being acknowledged here, but they're both defeats that won't have sat well with Brazil as a footballing nation. Not quite 7-1 as the home nation, but they've been right up there in terms of chapters of doom for this team.
Yeah, And it's probably, I suppose, the reason they went and got Ancelotti, you know, and broke with, I suppose, their own tradition of not hiring an external manager. But I suppose they felt in some way, shape or form they were behind the curve, so they needed to make a change and bring in some external expertise. So if this fails, which, to be fair, I don't not to write them off, but I don't think they're going to win the World Cup, just judging by the way what we've seen so far. So it's very interesting to know what they do then with that. Yeah, it must be very difficult, though, I suppose, when the bar is as high as it is, that it's like success or not. You know, nothing bar winning it is successful.
Okay, well,
that's pretty brutal.
Yeah, well, we were expecting something different to happen in this game, I think it's fair to say, because, look, I mean, we've all had a little bit of FOMO watching this year's World Cup, no Irish involvement in the United States, Mexico and Canada. However, when you walk around Dublin City on big Brazil match days, you do notice the famous gold jersey everywhere. It is a party time here. Biggest, one of the biggest expat communities in Ireland, in Dublin City, is that of the Brazilian community. So we thought it might be a good idea when they were playing their first knockout match, particularly because it was on at 6 p.m. Irish time, to send one of our team out to the Brazilian parties, really, in Dublin, that might be unfolding during their run to the World Cup final. So our football reporter, Ben Symes, we sent him down to Camden Street, down to Party Centre here in Dublin City, and to the Camden, where they have the big screen set up and plenty of Brazilian fans in the building as well. So we can say hello for the first time to Ben this evening. Ben, can you hear me in the middle of the din there in the Camden?
I don't know if you can hear the screens behind me. When I came into this place about half an hour before a kickoff, the music that was pouring out of it, Brazilians up dancing, a couple of wee pockets of Japanese fans sat around the place, but not a word out of them. The game started, the anthems went, and this place was absolutely electric. Neymar showed up on the screen and the whole place was roaring, screaming, people nearly crying. Everything that you associate Brazilian football and their fans to have with this national team. Like, every time the ball goes anywhere near the Japanese goal, they're just screaming. And then Japan score early in the first half, and you can just hear the wails from fans around here. And then those few little pockets of Japanese fans who've been up screaming when the goal goes in. Brazilian fans got a little bit somber then towards the end of the first half. Paqueta goes down injured. We all know how much they love Lucas Paqueta. But during halftime, there's a couple of DJs. I don't know if you can see just over to my right shoulder if you're watching on YouTube. A couple of DJs came on, started playing some Brazilian music. Then Endrick comes on, which the whole place lifts off again. So yeah, I feel like I've already been through a rollercoaster of emotions here. I feel like I've become an adopted Brazilian. But the noise in this place is absolutely insane. These headphones that I have on are supposed to be noise cancelling. They're not doing a whole lot of cancelling at all of the noise in here.
The Brazilians that have adopted you this evening, were they unbelievably confident before kickoff?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that they were confident. There was like a serious party atmosphere and a party vibe around the place. That's kind of been like squashed a little bit. But they have a new, I suppose, renowned optimism now that Endrick has come on for the second half. And the noise, I don't know if I'll have a voice when I end up coming back to the studio, whatever. I don't know if they'll let me leave tonight. It could be tomorrow. This could go on all night. I don't know if they're ever going to let me out of here. But I feel like it'll ramp up again. It just needs a goal. I feel like if they get a goal, this place is going to lift off again the way we saw it in the first half.
Well, the thing is, if they end up turning this around, Ben, and they end up winning tonight, your assignment isn't to come back to shooting. No. Your assignment is to join a party from the Camden to Dicey's, which is where things will reach a whole new level.
You know, when I was leaving earlier, I kind of, you know, part of me said, oh yeah, I'm planning to go back for the football show at 9 o'clock. Of course, we're only a 50-minute walk away. And then I said, what if they win? What if they win and all of a sudden I'm taken under the wing and, you know, I'm given a real Brazilian shirt name and my name's not Ben anymore. It's, I don't know, Beninha, whatever you want to go with. And then I'm out with them for the night. That was like really what I was hoping for. But I'm gonna whether I need a miracle, whether I need a Neymar miracle, an Endrick miracle, I don't know what you need. But you can already hear Endrick. I'm already starting to speak Brazilian.
Very good, as actually.
You could probably hear Neymar has just come up on the screen. Warming that's up. Gonna set them off a little bit again. So hopefully Atacante, Neymar can come on, and maybe we might have a chance again. But I'm hoping for a Brazil comeback, and then as I said, maybe a trip to Grace's Apple. We'll find out.
Well, you've got the Tim Vickery level of pronunciation down, so that's the first step. Your mission now, Ben, is to get taken under the wing and keep us up to speed on who has taken you under your wing and the relative events that actually happen over the course of the night. Of course, a task that is made easier if they equalise, but we leave that there for now. Ben Symes, our reporter at the Camden, 50 minutes on the clock is Brazil 0, Japan 1. So yeah, the substitution there at halftime, by the way, was Paquetá going off for Endrick. That was the change that Ancelotti was forced into at the break. David, let's get cracking into the news round. You're going to start with Football Matters.
Yeah, the FAI have confirmed that Ireland's home game with Israel will be played behind closed doors in Serbia. The board had requested to switch the game to a neutral venue due to operational challenges. It will now take place at the TSC Arena in Serbia on the 4th of October, with further details to be confirmed shortly. It follows confirmation of the reverse fixture being played in Hungary. That one takes place a week and 2 days prior in Debrecen. The association says it'll contact season ticket holders over compensation regarding that game in due course.
Okay, did we get any detail as to why this is landed in Serbia, or is it just you run through certain federations that are amenable to the Israeli team arriving?
Nothing as of yet. I'd imagine they'll probably be probed on it fairly soon, so we probably will get more detail on that over the next maybe week or so. But at the moment, no. It's I think a lot of people had thought it was going to be Hungary again, and then it kind of came to light last week or so that was looking less and less likely. So they've obviously ended up in Serbia now.
Yeah, maybe it's the optics of Hungary being their de facto home country when it comes to UEFA competition, so can't possibly play them there. You have news of Manchester City, rather, and Enzo Maresca's appointment. This has been a very dramatic story, Dev.
Yes, it certainly has. Enzo Maresca has been appointed as the successor to Pep Guardiola at Manchester City. The Spaniard left the club after a decade in charge of the Etihad, with the former Chelsea boss having been tipped to take over ever since. It's his third stint at the club, having previously held roles as academy manager and as an assistant coach to Guardiola. However, his former employers Chelsea have since criticised the move. In a statement, the Blues said it was clear to them that Maresca had a strong desire to succeed Guardiola. They said, in December 2025, our head coach unexpectedly and abruptly resigned from his position. Obviously, we felt let down, as we believe that his head and heart were focused on another club and another opportunity despite having just arrived at Chelsea the year before. No club wants to change its head coach midway through a season. However, in light of his decision not to continue fulfilling his responsibilities through to the end of the season, the club was left with no choice but to protect our players, our supporters and the badge and accept his resignation. In the circumstances and given the mutual respect between clubs, a confidential settlement has been reached with Manchester City, which includes the payment of compensation. A confidential settlement has also been reached with the former head coach, under which he will pay compensation. Maresca has since apologised as well and admitted that his resignation did open a path to join City. However, it says that was neither his intention or his wish. It's understood they'll be paid around £17 million in compensation as part of the deal. One thing to note on that as well, the entire statement, they refused to refer to him as Enzo Maresca. It was head coach the entire way through.
the beef simmering nicely between these two clubs now. First meeting between them and Chelsea next season is going to be in. Interesting one. What do you make of all this?
it's isn't it? Like, is there any club you'd have less sympathy for with that scenario than Chelsea? Talking about, like, oh, I cannot believe how you disrupt our season like that and disrupt our plans. It's like, you have like half a Brighton in there. Like, how many times can you go back and keep doing this? It's wonderfully petty. Wonderfully petty. But I am, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a football man. But, like, I don't understand how Enzo Maresca has become this hot. It's like, I'm sure he'll do a perfectly good job.
Oh! But
the fighting over Enzo Maresca is incredible.
I thought we were going to go back to the Camden there, but we're not. It was a brilliant goal line clearance by Japan, as I was fully sure Brazil had scored. I was fully sure that ball was behind the line, but obviously was not. Japan, meanwhile, have gone on the counter-attack. They've created a great opportunity, and they have fluffed their lines there as well. This is a brilliant game.
It's liven up, yeah. The ideal scenario for this game, though, is Japan taking the lead.
Yes. Mm.
Definitely not the other way. Even, yeah, like, it's going to just, oh my God.
There's actually almost three goal line clearances here. It comes off the defender, off the goalkeeper. It's Casemiro. And then one of the defenders gets his leg to it to actually clear it away from the line, full stop. So, yeah, that was Ito who got the final leg to the ball to clear the Japanese lines. And it was a good save from Suzuki there as well, but you're right. Yeah, Brazil chasing a game. If they were 1-0 up, even though it's against Japan, who they perceive to be better than, does it become like proper Ancelotti park the bus stuff, or do you have to honour the traditions of Brazilian football?
Maybe. I guess I feel if they were good enough to go 1-0 up, they're probably more likely to go 2-0 than Japan equalise. Well, I'd say once Japan start coming out the blocks then and get opened up a little bit easier, whereas this is going to be backs to the wall here for the next 40 minutes. It's just it's incredible. You know, when you're watching a game and it's just almost universally in the one part of the pitch over and over again. Just wants you to be able to get out. Yeah, well, look, it's all aboard.
Yeah, definitely.
Godspeed, Ben.
Yeah. Where are you taking us next, David? I think it is the World Cup stories.
It is indeed, yeah. So as we were mentioning there, the last 32 continues after yesterday's opening game of the knockout stages. 54 minutes gone in this game now between Japan and Brazil. Japan leading 1-0, a lovely strike just before the half-hour mark from Kaishu Sano. After that, it's Germany and Paraguay who will go head-to-head from half nine, while 2022 semi-finalists Morocco take on the Netherlands from 2 a.m. Canada, of course, advanced to the round of 16 with a win over South Africa last night. Stefan Oostekweo scored at the death to see the co-hosts move into the last 16. Marsh then gave an impassioned speech on the field following the final whistle.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. Oh. Let's go to the camera because Casemiro scored.
Oh, Brazil have equalised. There is beer flying absolutely everywhere. All over me, all over my laptop, all over my lovely headphones. Brazil, it feels like they're taking the lead. I'm just going to let you be taken away by this.
We're not getting that.
We're not getting that.
Your mic because is too good.
This place is on wheels. Oh, my Lord. It feels like, I've heard Arthur saying it is, Brazil have just been in the final third. Loving the pressure on. It felt like it was coming.
If you take off your headphones, Ben, we're going to get that audio. So we're going to fill here for a moment and describe the goal. It's a brilliant cross from the edge of the box, just on the left-hand side. There's one Japanese defender playing Casemiro on side, and Casemiro just...
That's a super header.
It is really, really good.
It is a super header. And you wrote him off.
We completely wrote him off. Completely wrote him off. Doesn't have the legs, but boy, does he have the head.
Oh, God.
And Ben, I think, we're not going to go back to Ben there. We're going to try and get a sample of that audio and the atmosphere in the room in just a moment. There are other people. We've got a visual of Ben there and the place is absolutely hopping. There was beer flying everywhere. But that microphone, it seems, is designed to pick up Ben's voice and Ben's voice only. But they are going mental on Camden Street. It looks like the Brazilians in Dublin having a great time. David, I rudely cut you off there for Casemiro's equaliser. Where were you?
Marsh then gave an impassioned speech on the field following the final whistle, and then he was asked about it after the game.
Yeah, I mean, look, people like to say it's performative to meet on the pitch, and frankly, I don't give a what people have to say. Like, all I care about is our own team and what we do together. And in these moments, it's hard because after the game, everybody gets pulled in a million different directions by media, and you don't really have a chance to be with your team unless you take that moment right there. So at different times, we've shared messages with each other. I always try to get the leaders to speak because, again, they're Canadian. This is their national team. But I wanted to be able to, you know, voice to them like how important a moment this will prove to be for the sport in the country, for the national team program. It's a shame we couldn't do it in Vancouver, right in front of our fans, but nonetheless, I think you saw the character of the team, the quality of the team, the mentality of the team, the togetherness of the team. Like, it's a pleasure to be their coach, and the responsibility I feel to them specifically is what motivates me every day to try to prepare and create a platform for them to be their greatest, and I think they did that today.
Just not a huge opportunity here for Brazil. It's Vinicius through the legs of a Japanese defender.
It would have been the goal of the competition.
Oh my God. Oh. Suzuki save. It's with the outside of the right foot. Does the Japanese goalkeeper get to it? He does indeed. He tips it onto the post, and it's absolutely phenomenal stuff all round, both attack and goalkeeping. It's just a brilliant World Cup moment. Poor Jesse Marsh, he's got interrupted rudely there. Canada being demoted to the B story 24 hours on. I mean, this is a pretty cool way for things to finish last night. I'd never seen a game that seemed to be more destined to be heading for extra time and penalties. And I guess what we got instead was this brilliant cathartic moment for one of the host nations who weren't even in their host country.
Yeah. It was chronic. It was the worst kind of the worst idea of all those things of what that would be, that 32, when you're like, some people were fearful of the games. Good grief. It was a rough watch. But look, it's probably fair play. It was a great goal to win it. But not to parrot one of the other prominent Sligo voices in the media. He not a big fan of Jesse Marsh. Won't lie.
Why is that?
He's clownish.
Why?
But in
what sense is he clownish?
That carry on. Like, I couldn't. I happened to be watching it live that evening when they bet Qatar. and listening to Alan, he's like, right on. Someone got, like, it's just his whole demeanour. His whole demeanour I find extremely troubling. I find it incredibly self-serving in terms of just the way he frames things as if it's a case that I'm all about the unit here, the team, everything else, but it's very much,
I think he sees,
I'm to the forefront of this. And if it goes well, I'd say he'd be a very quick man to throw people under the bus.
Ah, well, that's completely unfair to say, because we haven't seen that happen. That's like, that's just unfounded to say about Jesse Marsh, that he's going to throw somebody under the bus for.
But he did it in that thing, even after the guitar thing, the way he did performatively with Lopetegui, and then it wouldn't hear this out. Now, who knows? But I don't know what Lopetegui said to him. Obviously, his guitar boss, but like, I don't think Lopetegui was there gloating or trying to do anything regarding, obviously, Kone's horrific leg break. And I just felt he was a bit classless with that, where I think there's a hint to him where it's the Jesse Marsh show first, and beyond that, wherever I lay my hat, that's maybe I'm being harsh, I don't know, I just think he's a bit of a fool.
I think you are being extremely harsh. Maybe I'm in the minority here, but I don't know. I think that he sees his role as a genuine hype man, rightly or wrongly. I don't think it's a self-serving thing. I think it's he views the nation maybe as having this latent footballing energy or supportive energy for a team that he's trying to turn into some sort of real action from the stands. Now, I know they weren't playing at home last night, but
when this World Cup has been and gone, what are you going to remember most from Canada? Who's going to be the standout figure from Canada's World Cup for you?
The standout figure from Canada's World Cup will probably be, could be Jonathan David or Kyle Larin or Jesse Marsh.
Because Jesse Marsh has been to the forefront.
But I mean, he's a football manager. All football managers are at the forefront. They have to do every single media dealing. They have to speak before the match, after the match. This is a symptom of football, not a symptom of Jesse Marsh.
I think Jesse Marsh is very equipped at dealing with it. I just feel like maybe it's a slight kind of bias. And I know that there's a general thing like with football and the American accent and stuff, and I'm definitely aware that that could be a factor into it, and just he performs in a different way, in a more American style compared to what we're used to, and if it's effective, fair play to him, but I'm unconvinced.
David, where are you taking us next?
Closer to home, actually. Bohemians have reportedly received a walkover in their FA Cup game with Ringman Rangers. The Irish Examiner is reporting that the Cork club will not play against the Gypsies due to a potential clash with the All-Ireland Hurling Final. The scheduled date is, of course, the same day as the World Cup Final as well, which gets underway at 8 o'clock that day. According to the report, Bohemians' return to European football made adjusting the fixture a bit more complicated. They start their campaign against St. Joseph's of Gibraltar on the 9th of July with a reverse fixture a week later.
Okay, very good. So that rounds up today's football news. Where to next, David?
Louth and Mayo will play the first of this year's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship semi-finals. The two sides will square off in Croke Park on July 11th at 6 o'clock with the Tailteann Cup final between Wicklow and Down on beforehand at 3:30. That is, of course, the first semi-final for Louth since 1957, so a massive occasion for them, no doubt. Kieran Byrne, who scored 3 points yesterday in their win over Monaghan, spoke to Off the Ball's Jonathan Higgins about Louth's and his own journey up to this point.
Kieran, you're just after coming out of a very happy dressing room, no doubt. First semi-final for Louth, 69 years. Your own remarkable journey as well. What a special day.
Yeah, it's absolutely special. As you said, we haven't been in a semi-final in so long, and this group's been through the brink of it. Like, we started 5 years ago, this whole system, and we've come through the stages, Division 4, Division 3, and climbed our way back up. And look, we started off today with a red card in the first couple of minutes of the game, and we showed our grit and stayed in the game for as long as we could. And we knew if we could stay in the game for as long as we could, that Monaghan's legs would probably get a wee bit tired after that break. So, look, special times.
Talk to me about your own journey. Gavin said you had a lot of injury problems at the start of the year and had to, I suppose, take a step back to go forward. How's that been for you?
Yeah, it's been very, very frustrating. I think it's been well documented that my career has been riddled with a lot of injuries. I've had three probably real serious injuries, two ACLs and a fracture on my ankle. So at one stage, I suppose, football probably was going to be put on the back burner and I suppose get on with life. But I never really hesitated in that. I always wanted to, I suppose, get back to these stages and help out with the team as much as I can. And I suppose in the last couple of games, to get a chance to go out in Croke Park. And look, if you can't play football on these days, you might pack it in anyways.
Yeah, what a weekend of Gaelic football at Croke Park. Tommy Rooney was there for the entire thing. And I'm happy to say he is with us on the line now. Tommy, how are you doing?
Hey, Owen. How are you doing? Very well. Very well. Enjoying this Brazil and Japan game. I've got it over my left shoulder and I've got a view of the Camden on my right where they're going bananas as well at times. So it's a, it's an interesting experience.
Yeah, we had high hopes for this Brazil-Japan game and it has absolutely delivered on that. I think we've had high hopes for All-Ireland football quarter-final weekend as well for a number of years, Tommy. And it so often under-delivers, especially after the preceding 2 weeks where there were shocks in each week. You kind of expected maybe it was time for football to kind of regress to a state of being decent. But this was great again all over the weekend.
Oh, and I don't know what you were expecting, man. I don't know whether you are someone who hasn't learned their lesson from this championship summer. I have been scorned and I have been taught to expect the unexpected already. I've been burned so many times by this championship. It has been the summer of shocks and it's class. And it, they're not even shocks. We've been saying it throughout the year. So many of the teams now are on such an equal footing. And the new game rewards risk and abandon. And I suppose even the inexperience of youth that we saw at times this weekend. We saw some glorious performances from kids in Croke Park this weekend. And to me, that was one of the best things I took from it was the young fellas that kind of let off the shackles.
Yeah, like, is there a greater sense of these young players being able to handle the big occasion? Is there a sense that actually the young players started playing the new rules at a younger age than literally everybody else did, and they've kind of got up to speed a little bit quicker, and maybe they've got a bit of an acceleration moment in their career? Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I wonder is a bit of it like just this new mentality that's in the sport, that people are just embracing the madness of it all. And I think that maybe puts players, maybe it takes off the tension, maybe it allows that little bit more freedom in the way players play. I was watching young Dara Byrne, who ends up a man of the match, and 6 minutes in I'm thinking, this kid needs to just shoot next time he gets the ball. He needs to get himself into this game because he had spilled one or two. By God, when he settled, he was absolutely unreal. And just the under breaking ball, kicking two-pointers from freeze and play, glorious stuff. One fellow who didn't need time to settle, though, was Kobe McDonald. 30 seconds in, he had a point. Towards the end of the game, he nearly scored an absolute worldie of a goal. I know we're raving there about Vinicius Jr.'s nutmeg on Tomiyasu, but what about Kobe flicking the ball over Stephen Sherlock's head with a hand pass and running onto it in the far end? Like that, the thrill of some of the football that was played at the weekend. And that's before we get to Dylan Gainey, David Clifford, or from my mind, the footballer of the weekend, Dara McDonald. Like what he did for Louth this weekend at 21 years of age, with his team down to 14 players, the county down to 14. They kicked 27 points. Louth would not have won that game if Dara McDonald did not produce the game that he produced.
Yeah, he was exceptional. You mentioned Kobe there. I think, David, we're going to hear from his manager next in terms of the Gaelic game stories on the news round.
Yes, Tommy, of course, spoke with manager Andy Moran about after the game about the turnaround to their game versus Cork and the excitement for this Mayo team getting to Croke Park.
The week was superb. Like, we just, not meaning to overplay this, like, the boys, like, give them Sunday off, they did their meetings on Monday. Like, we only trained on Wednesday, and the atmosphere of training was just brilliant. The B team, Joe, were just like the guys that haven't played, they were absolutely superb right through it. And when you have that in training, I think it's an energy that brings. But the boys were just excited about being here, and they were excited about, the older lads were excited about seeing the younger fellas here, Joe. And like, you have to remember, Tommy, we haven't really been here since 2023, and before that the two All-Irelands we got to were both COVID. Now Tyrone was the right occasion in 2021, but before that, so some of these lads haven't really seen that side of intercounty football yet, which is great for
them. Yeah. Sorry, Tommy, do you want to come in on that?
Well, Andy, I spoke to Andy for 7 minutes and it was funny. I got a great photo actually, because we did it on the Cusick Stand sideline, of Kobe McDonald and Jordan Flynn watching the Kerry Tyrone game on the Cusick Stand side with Andy Moran's kids, Ollie and Charlotte, beside them. And we could hear the noise and the madness of what was happening in Kerry Tyrone. And there was just something Andy said in that interview, you know, under the Hogan Stand or under the Cusick Stand. And it was in the last answer he gave. And he spoke about Croke Park and what it's like to play in Croke Park. and the excitement and the fun and the privilege of Croke Park on a day like that when there's so many people there. And it just made sense to me how free and empowered the Mayo footballers looked against Cork. Cork looked stodgy and stiff and slow, as did Galway. And I think we've learned that that style of football right now isn't being rewarded. And footballers and teams who play with that little bit of abandon, and they're being rewarded right now. So it's brilliant. And it's a big move. It's a big moment for Andy Moore and his young Mayo team. And what an opportunity for Louth. Like, All-Ireland semi-final, 1957 was the last time they won the All-Ireland. Like, what a game. And I'll be honest with you, lads, I don't know if you see the football pod, but myself and Paddy recorded in Croke Park, and the draw was being made live beneath us in the Hogan stand. And I was disappointed the audio didn't come out. But one of the loudest cheers of the day. Croke Park is empty. All the journalists are downstairs talking to Pork Joyce. We're up there. The seagulls are swirling around. The draw is made. And we hear this crazy cheer coming somewhere under the Hogan stand. 70 people, I'd say. Maybe 60. I reckon it was the Louth footballers. I reckon they heard who they drew. I reckon it was the Louth footballers. And there was no one else it could have been. Because at the same time, you're watching the draw. And I just think that's class. Because, and it, like, they know it's a 50-50 shot. I'd say all anyone was hoping to avoid was the raging hot favourites for the All-Ireland, the reigning champions chasing their 40th title, Kerry. And I got a text at the same time of a very prominent commentator on Radio Kerry, whose initials are T&M. And he was trying to seriously tell me that Dublin are now favourites for that semi-final. So there's a lot of fun ahead in the Gaelic football in the next couple of weeks.
Who else could that have been? I'm trying to, you know, give the... Are they not still serving pints in the premium / corporate hospitality areas in Croke Park at that time?
It was too collective. It was too much of a loud box roar. It could have been. You're maybe doing my job here where I'm attributing it too directly. But at the time, that's what it felt like to me. That's who it was. So, and why wouldn't they be excited to be in an All-Ireland semi-final and have an opportunity to make an All-Ireland final?
What was actually the most extraordinary thing that happened in this year's Leinster Championship, Tommy? Was it the fact that this Dublin team, who now look to be back, didn't manage to win it? Or was it the fact that that Dublin team, who looked useless in the Leinster Championship, actually beat Louth by 10 points? Because half the teams, and you can almost throw Mayo in here as well, the teams left in this championship have all had serious lows in this very same championship. And sure, you can throw all four in them in there as well if you want to throw Kerry's hammering at the hands of Donegal in there as well. Four means nothing, it turns out.
Yeah, and that was the most interesting thing that Jim McGuinness said in our post-match press conference in Killarney a couple of weeks back. He said, forget about the form book in Gaelic football. And nobody heard it because of other comments that were made that afternoon.
The most interesting thing.
he was dead right. And, you know, I've been trying to do the power rankings all your own. I made a public appeal for you to take them back. I flew a kite and you didn't bite in it. So it's up to you. Would you like it back? I don't know. Would you like it back? Because it's absolutely... I'm tearing my hair out. I made it look like a fool every week because of these bloody power rankings. I think we should just give up on them because, like, the way teams are swapping and flipping and flopping and, like, even... But, like, such credit has to go to Dublin yesterday and the manner in which Kenny and Scully and Conn and the young fellas that have just came in and taken on the mantle in this team under so much pressure came through that game. So much credit has to go to Tyrone for the manner in which they pushed Kerry all the way and were very, very unlucky with a couple of refereeing decisions. And Kerry were brilliant too. But Louth, the performance of the weekend went to Louth. We know the impact that a red card has now in Gaelic football. It has a devastating impact on the team that are down to 14. A load of teams have failed to be able to achieve anything from it. I think Louth kicking 27 points with 14 players for 64 minutes was, for me, one of the most remarkable things that's happened in this championship.
Yeah, it certainly was. Tommy Rooney, great stuff this evening. Do you want to give us your quick 4-1 in terms of the semi-finalists, or is that reserved for the power rankings day?
Not a hope, pal. I've got about 4 hours of work ahead of me tonight to try and work that out. And I couldn't even give you a top four in the hurling. Obviously, that's taking place this weekend, so we're going to have a lot of fun building up to that as well.
Of course. Interesting week, actually. Sorry, before I do let you go, Tommy, on that front, there's going to be limited press availability in terms of what we already know at the moment. Like Clare, Galway, Cork and Limerick, they've yet to arrange press briefings for the weekend's game. So are we going to hear from the teams, do we know, before throw-in?
Well, I think there's a story in the Examiner, I'm pretty sure today, that there's going to be a little bit of a hit on the money awarded to the team who wins the All-Ireland. And I don't think they're going to be too bothered by it because they haven't actually played ball with media requirements from the GAA side over the last couple of months. And I don't really know what it is. Is it a bit of a one-upmanship? Is it a bit of the schedule is so tight that they don't want to commit players going away because time is at a premium to do media duties? I think the game of hurling suffers from that. I really do. They're already wearing bloody helmets. It's already hard enough to make them out from so far away, and they're already now in the shadows of the football championship given the changes that have happened to football in the last little while, and hurling has enough problems. I do think this weekend is going to be absolutely superb, and I really hope for hurling's sake that the likes of Galway and the likes of Clare can push Cork and Limerick to the pin of their collars, and we get two really, really good games regardless of who ends up in the final, because hurling needs a big end to the summer here.
Tommy Rooney, great stuff, thanks Millie for joining us.
Slaw nuts.
76 minutes on the clock in Houston, Texas. It's still Brazil 1, Japan 1. We'll get back to the Camden to see how the Brazilians are feeling very, very shortly.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.